Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Jill Sylvester, and we'll be talking about her book, Trust Your Intuition, 100 Ways to Transform Anxiety and Depression for Stronger Mental Health. If you're struggling with anxiety and or depression, you've likely tried a laundry list of things to feel better. Do your efforts often leave you feeling frustrated, depleted, and stuck? Maybe you've turned to medication only to discover that it makes you feel like you're going through life in a fog. But what if there is a way to feel better by learning to trust yourself? Written by licensed mental health counselor and wellness advocate Jill Sylvester, Trust Your Intuition provides 100 simple tips and techniques designed to teach you to harness the power of your intuition, find the hidden meaning in your suffering, transform anxious and depressed feelings, and emerge stronger and more powerful than ever. You can find out more by visiting Jill's website, which is jillsylvester.com. And so with that, I'd like to welcome Jill to the show. Good day, Jill.
Good day. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to talking about this topic and giving our listeners some of those tips for living better. But before we get into that, let's start with, can you give the listeners just a little bit of a background of your journey and how it is that intuition and that whole idea of energy and anxiety, kind of how do they fit into the picture?
Well, as I mentioned in the book, that this has been a journey of my own personal development prior to and continuing to be while I am a licensed mental health therapist. And so a lot of the techniques in the book are alternative means that I have used to practice my own self-care and to feel as good as I can possibly feel. And it's something that I felt passionate about when opening my own private practice so that I could, you know, not only walk the talk, but help other people to do some of the things that I've done to see what kind of results they would have. And it's been great.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, I want to talk a bit about the book. Now, there are 100 tips, and I think in a few moments we can kind of, I think, going through the book and the different topic, the parts of the book and individual numbers would give the listeners a really good example of what you have to offer. But one of the things I noticed is that, I think I read on your website, is that there are four steps that you use to guide your clients through achieving that happier, fulfilled life. And I'd like to talk a little bit about them and kind of how that fits into your practice. One of them is to start small. Can you talk about what do you mean by that, and how can we implement that?
So, yeah, when you want to feel better, and if anxiety and depression is something that you struggle with, or just in terms of self-care and wanting to feel better, we can often get overwhelmed by the whole idea of how to incorporate, good food and good thoughts into our practice and how to take it all on at once. So when we start small, it means, picking one thing. So maybe it's, food affects mood, as I mentioned in the book. So being mindful of what you eat, and maybe you pick one thing like cutting back sugar. You don't have to eradicate it entirely, but maybe, cutting out sugar during the week or a little bit less each day, so that you start to feel like you're making small gains so that you can, you know, build on those and add other things into your practice. And similarly, starting small could be, you know, just saying an affirmation every day of when you find yourself tripping up and being, you know, engaged in negative thinking, being able to just say, oh, there I go again, you know, I'm doing it again kind of thing, without berating yourself, without having to take on this, you know, huge next step, just kind of be mindful of it. So small steps just to bring awareness into the picture and, again, to feel like you're moving forward, because you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, that's real important. And, you know, we are our worst critics often. So, you know, we can, you know, that negative talk can be pretty persistent at times. One of the steps that you talk about is switching out of autopilot. And boy, I know there are times when, you know, it just seems after I'm kind of out of autopilot, it's not until I'm out did I realize that I was in autopilot.
Yeah, actually, one of the steps is letting, you know, the universe or God be your autopilot. And so being able to allow for something else to take over when you're having a really hard time, and being able to just let go of control and allow something else, a force far greater than ourselves, to take over sometimes when we really need to just let go and practice surrendering, so that we can see that, you know, we are part of a larger, much grander plan than often we have prepared for ourselves. And that sometimes in the letting go, we can be surprised as to how things really unfold for the better.
Yeah, true. And also, you communicate to check in with yourself. And I know that for some people, that, you know, it can be hard to institute that into their, you know, their daily routine. My question is that, is this, like, no, I mean, the idea of checking in with yourself, I mean, does that mean kind of like just pausing from what you're doing to be able to see, you know, how you feel, what's going on? I mean, what does checking in with yourself look like? You know,
So checking in means to, you know, it depends on the person, but a couple of examples would be stopping and pausing during the day and taking some deep breaths in between shifts, let's say, or, you know, for stay-at-home moms before your kids come home from school, for people in the workforce, you know, stopping after lunch break before you go back into the office, and just stopping and saying, you know, where am I at? You know, how am I doing? Am I on point? Am I aligning with everything I said I wanted to do today? How far off am I? How aligned am I? It's just those little precious pauses, I call them, to just kind of take inventory and slow things down in order to decide if you want to go this way or that way. Because sometimes we get so caught up on what we're doing, right? We just, we lose sight of what we said we wanted to do at the beginning of the day, what we said we wanted for our lives at the beginning of the year, you know, because we're just always going. So it's more about being and checking in and being mindful of whether we're on point or not with however we choose to design our lives, not what someone else says is right for us.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. And then, you know, it's just one of the things, like you say, I mean, it can, you know, it can be months, weeks, months, even years before we really kind of take that pause and check in and see where we are to where we either thought we would be or want to be, even.
Right.
So, yeah. So now your book is broken up into five parts. And so what I thought we could do is maybe talk about each of the parts, you know, the kinds of tips that are included in the section, and maybe even a couple of them. And I'll refer to them by number just so the audience knows, because there are 100, you know, we're going to be picking them throughout, you know, just to let them know if they want to go back and check or, you know, get the book and check back for themselves. But anyway, part one is hold on. So what are the kinds of tips, what kind of information is contained in that particular section?
So hold on is often the first choice point, if you will, where you start to feel like something has to change. So it's that very kind of shaky thing that happens where we realize, like, we are out of alignment. Something is not right mm-hmm. here. Something needs to change in ourselves, in our relationships, in our career path. And that can feel very, very overwhelming. So hold on is a representation of the physical things that often need to happen to be able to just stop and take those small steps, like you said, and be able to start to create a path to move forward. So a couple of the tips in this section are, you know, getting enough sleep, holding on literally, like if you're having a panic attack, mm-hmm. holding on to the desk, to a chair, to someone's hand, something to tether yourself to the ground so that you can start to feel like everything's going to be okay. I just need to move through these moments to get to higher ground. Exercise, yeah. Taking deep breaths, like you said a few minutes ago. So just steps about just getting your feet on solid ground in order to start to lay out the land to create a different life yeah. for yourself.
Yeah, you know, in that section too, I liked the number three, feeling stuck, physically move out of the space you were in, because you were talking about the physical nature. So, you know, to me, I thought that's, you know, an outward expression of really what you want to do. And then the one, state out loud, we're not doing that anymore. So
yeah.
I think there can be a lot of power in saying those kinds of things out loud, can't there?
Oh, absolutely. I get a lot of feedback on moving out of the space you're in and saying we're not doing that anymore. Because what happens is, again, it's a physical act that you're taking to change up your energy space. So in the first one, physically moving out of the space you're in, you know, let's take, for example, a kid who's biting their nails doing homework, or an adult just biting their nails trying to write a book or a project or something like that, right? When you're stuck in a space where you're like, okay, this isn't working for me, I'm stuck on the same thought, nothing's working, nothing's moving. Sometimes just getting up and walking over to the other side of your kitchen, or getting up and walking across the first floor of your house to be able to gain perspective. It's like, it's kind of like elongating taffy. Like you're moving out of one space into another, and you start to feel it. You start to feel that disconnect and that separation from where you were into another space. So it can be very, very motivating when you move physically in order to change up the energy and create something new. And similarly, when you say to yourself, we're not doing this anymore. So any bad habits, any maladaptive behavior that you mm-hmm. want to change, as soon as you catch yourself, which is the first step, to be able to say, we're not
right.
doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you say it, you're changing up the energy. You're bringing light to it, and you're deciding then and there whether to do the same thing, which is your choice, or to do something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things that I thought was kind of funny is that throughout the different parts of the book, gremlins pop up. So, I mean, it was just like, yeah, I would be going through and looking, all of a sudden, you know, there's a gremlin again. And I had to laugh because, you know, it would be just like a gremlin to permeate through the book, you know, throughout the different parts.
Right.
But can you talk about, I mean, because, you know, they, you know, there's a few tips regarding them. Can you talk a little bit about them? Because I think, you know, if we can identify what they are, and might help us combat them better.
Yeah, definitely. Gremlins are, everybody's got them. I wrote a whole book about the gremlins in my young adult novel, The Land of Blue, which is for young adults and adults, about how the gremlins plague us. And it's essentially a self-help book under the guise of fiction. So I'm a quote-unquote fan of talking about the gremlins, because we all have them. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter your gender, your career path. Everybody's got that negative speak that gets them stuck in those, again, maladaptive behavior patterns. that hold you back, you know, essentially from your greatness. So when you start to understand the way they work, which is why I put them throughout the book to show you how they pop up, you know, you'll be going along and you'll say, wow, you know, I'm doing really good. I'm doing this. I'm overcoming my gremlins. And then 2.5 weeks later, they show up in another form, or they show up in the same form, and you're like, I thought I nailed this, you know. But that's how they work. So when you can look at it as a test, you can become a little bit more playful with it instead of just feeling in despair, which can happen a lot, to ourselves, right? We say, oh, my God, I'm never going to get over this, or this is always going to plague me. And it's like, well, no, you know, try to see it in a different way. And, you know, again, that's how they work. They pop up and the test is there. And so when you start to learn how to become mindful of when and how they show up and how sneaky they can be, you do a better job of working through them.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and it's really a perfect description of the kind of chatter and the effects, you know, that it would have on someone, you know, and you know, when you think, when I picture gremlins, I go back to the movie, but it's, you know, one of those, you know, annoying little things that just, you know, seem to come out of nowhere, you know, and you just kind of have to bat them away, you know, and go on with what you're doing.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, now part two of the book was take good care of yourself, you know, and, you know, that's one thing I think that people, many people struggle with, you know, is taking that time, you know, for that self-care. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how that self-care feeds into transforming anxiety?
Yeah, so building on the first part of the book of Hold On, again, something has to change physically to come to our awareness that we need to, that or that we want, right? We desire transformation. So taking good care of yourself usually doesn't happen right away with a mindset of, okay, I'm going to start doing this. Usually there's something that precedes it to kind of rock our world and shake the foundation. So we build up to taking good care of ourselves first by becoming aware and going through that, you know, distressful time to get to a place where we start to decide, okay, taking good care of myself means I'm going to start caring about my space. I'm going to start taking better care of my body. I'm going to include exercise and good foods. I'm going to be mindful of my anxious thoughts, and instead of just being submissive to them, being able to talk back to those thoughts and decide that they're not going to control my life. So taking good care of yourself, there's many levels of doing that. And we have to want to do that in order to experience success.
Yeah. Now, one of the tips, number 28, was scheduling regular mental health days. And can you talk a little bit about that? I'm sure, you know, what one person's mental health day would be very different from another. But can you talk about what are the common elements that make for a good mental health day?
Sure. Just like what you said, it's going to be different for everybody. But the most important thing is that you schedule them, and that they have meaning for you. So, you know, yours could be, you know, putting one once a month on your calendar where you're getting up maybe a little bit later, sleeping in, taking time in nature, eating good food, shutting the phone off for somebody else. It could be, you know, watching old movies all day, or watching, you know, comedies all day, so that, you know, it lightens the load of a really stressful workplace. Something where you're scheduling time to completely step away from the norm, step away from the regular schedule that you hold, and take a time out to gain perspective and just get a break. So not just a weekend break, because often that's, you know, involves a lot of other things too. But being able to really just take time for, you know, yourself and you alone.
Yeah. Very much so. And now one of the tips also in that section was to listen to your anxiety, you know, and I know when in an anxious moment or an anxious time, it can be difficult to kind of step outside, you know, and kind of look. So when you're talking about listening to your anxiety, exactly what does that look like?
I'm a firm believer professionally and personally, just in working with anxiety as long as I have, that anxiety brings a message. And that when we learn to listen to it, as opposed to shutting down from it or being afraid of it and running away from it, when we can turn and face it and understand what it means, we can get through it that much quicker, and we can join forces with it so that we start to feel much more in control of our life and start to understand the underlying message that often accompanies the really incredibly uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I said. Sometimes it can be difficult to, you know, in the moment, but that I think probably would be the ideal time to be able to do that. You know, to transform, to make maximum transformation.
Because that's what it does, right? If we're going along and everything is, we're content, we're complacent.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to listen to that. So if we're starting to have that buzzing feeling, and we're getting uncomfortable, that's the time when anxiety is going to get our attention. So when we can learn to transform the headaches or the stomach aches or the racing heart to say, what is this message bringing? What's the message I need to hear right now at this time? Am I making the right choice in terms of friends that I'm going out with right now? Am I making the right choice in attending this function, this job, this relationship, this food? It can come in all different ways. But when you learn to listen to it, it really can be that quick where you can, you know, you come to make a decision based on what is right for your higher self, you know, as a result of listening to your anxiety, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. It's kind of, you know, once you act on, you know, the intuition or the guidance, once you act on it, you know, more comes in, you know, and it becomes, it's kind of like strengthen that connection.
Completely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, now I just want to let listeners know, shortly we're going to be taking about a 90-second break. But before we do, let's go ahead and do part three. Part three is believe. Again, how does that then fit in with take care of yourself?
So believe is about strength, well, kind of like what you said about strengthening, you know, building on it and strengthening that muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start to make the steps toward transforming your life and take better care of yourself, you're going to start to hear those messages more. You're going to start to build on those messages more. And then the job then becomes to believe even more in those messages so that you can really start to thread that powerful current, if you will, through your life in greater ways. And when you do that, your life really starts to feel even more solid.
Yeah. Okay. And now one of the things that one of the tips, number 43, was change the story if you, quote, can't change your situation. That one kind of just popped out at me because it was one of those things where, you know, so often I've heard, like, what people call into shows and talking to, you know, counseling guests and that kind of thing, and the people would say, I can't do this and I can't, you know. So I when I read that one, change the story if you, quote, can't, you know, change your situation, it kind of just popped out at me. So can you talk a little bit about that for people who feel that they can't change their situation?
Yeah, when we can't, quote unquote, change a situation, we're stuck in a negative belief. And so that's what the whole this section of the book is on, about believing that you can change the way that you're thinking currently, which is bringing you the same results. So when you can step out of your situation and change the narrative underneath, you start to change your story so that your feelings change as a result. So if I'm someone in a job that I can't stand and I say I can't get out of it, this is how I support my family, this is what I have to do, I'm so miserable, blah, blah, blah. And you start to change the story to one of, well, this job is bringing me the income that I need to pay for my child's college education. And at the same time, I'm learning a skill of public speaking while I'm here, or I'm learning how to get along with people that I've never worked with before. And it's bringing me these other skills. You start to expand the way that you're looking at the situation. So it gets you out of the doldrums of one lane of limiting beliefs to a larger landscape of, well, I don't love all of it, but there are other aspects to it that are positively impacting my life, and I need to hang mm-hmm. through that until I can get to the place where I can leave it. So you're rewriting the narrative in order to change
mm-hmm.
the feeling.
Okay, that's good. That's good. And that instills a sense that things are changing. You know, that, you know, there is something positive, and things are changing, and you know that can be the trajectory of the way things are going to go.
Totally. Yep.
Yeah. So now, one other one in that section that I would like for you to talk about is honor your soul contracts, number 53. You know, a lot of my listeners out there are probably have a sense of soul contracts, but can you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
Mm-hmm. Soul contracts is a deep discussion that I have with my clients in session about oftentimes the relationships that are the hardest for us, about what they are actually bringing to our life when we can look past the egos of the person, get past the egos of our own egos, right? And being able to start to understand what the relationship is really there to teach us. So kind of like earlier about listening to the message of anxiety, it's starting to understand mm-hmm. what the soul of that person, your husband, your partner, your child, your boss, is really there for you to learn. And when you can look past the person and the difficult situations that we often find ourselves in, we start to understand the experiences that are there for us to learn from and to grow from. And it becomes, again, it creates a different feeling when we can look at it from that higher self lens versus just the ego who feels taken advantage of or frustrated or not loved or abandoned, and getting past those emotions in order to understand the real reason for our growth and what's happening.
Yeah, you know, that shift in perspective is, you know, I mean, I hadn't really thought much about it like that, you know, in the sense of recognizing that, you know, that soul contract, that interaction is there for our awareness, whatever that may be, but it's just something there for us to recognize. It's kind of like it's lines in a script in the play. They're already written, you know, they're there to be experienced for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. And that's all part of a larger meaning.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have one more before the break, and that was consciously. Oh no, and that's the next section. So I would say consciously escape. I'm trying to escape already. that's the trust your intuition section. So why don't I go ahead and take a break? And it's just a 90-second break. Do want to let listeners know, if you would like to call in and ask Jill any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to pose them there. And then when we come back, Jill, then we'll move on into part four, which is trust your intuition. And I'm sure that you probably know where my question is going to start with that. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back. Everybody stay tuned.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And real quickly again, we just added the distribution to our podcast to Spotify and to Google Play. So you can find us there, as well as TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and all those others. But back to today's show. Our special guest is Jill Sylvester, and we're talking about her book, Trust Your Intuition, 100 Ways to Transform Anxiety and Depression for Stronger Mental Health. And again, you can find out more about this and her other work by visiting her website, which is jillsylvester.com. Okay, so with that, we're back, Jill.
Hi there.
Hi there. Great. Okay, so before we went to break, we're talking about part four. And part four is Trust Your Intuition. And you kind of, you know, kind of spoke a little bit about that in the first half of the show. But one of the tips in that one that just caught my attention was consciously escape. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think there's probably a lot of people who would like to know what that's about and how do I do it?
Sure. So consciously escaping is about, you know, definitively choosing to take a break. So I got a couple thoughts going on here at once, so I'll just say it like this. You know, some of us escape through drugs or alcohol, right? Some of us escape through social media. And that is just when we're kind of like on autopilot and we're just looking for ways to get away from what we're, you know, what we're doing and what we either don't care about or we just need a break from. So consciously escaping is deciding purposely, I need to step away from what I'm doing because this isn't right for me. I need to, you know, take a mental health day because work is becoming a grind. I need to get up from studying this subject because it's doing me in mentally and I'm just not getting anywhere with it. So it's taking control of your life in the way that says, let me, you know, step away from this so that I can feel better inside myself physically and mentally. So some of the ways you can consciously escape are to, you know, go for a run, go and exercise, get in your head that way, right? Or get out of your head, get into your body and be able to think and dream. Meditating, that's a consciously escaping activity. It means I'm going to step away from everything. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to go into my mind and say a repeated mantra, or I'm going to visualize success for myself in a job that I want to be in a relationship that I want to be in. So you're consciously choosing to do something that is healthy for you versus unhealthy. And when you can start to think about the ways that you consciously escape for the not so good, you can start to decide for yourself other ways to step away and give yourself a break, but in a much more healthy manner.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And I would think that if you were to frame it, you know, such that it's an escape, I mean, you know, just have that mental predisposition that whatever the activity you're about to do is an escape. I mean, that in itself would, I would think, kind of contribute to the idea of, you know, being away from the routine and you know, help with that regenerative type of a process.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So also in the section here on trust your intuition is the 162 to get to know your guides. Do you have discussions with your clients often about guides? How do you think, you know, we can include those guides into our particular daily routine?
Yeah, I do talk to my clients about that. I think it's the way you present it is the way it's going to be received. It doesn't have to be something that's so out there. It can be a normal part of conversation that, you know, we're guided from that other place. So whether you believe in God or angels, or I think, you know, you can just kind of weave guides right into that conversation, which is just like we have, you know, coaches and teachers and guides on this earth plane. We have, I believe, guides in that other realm. And when you can start to connect with that force for whatever subject matter that you're looking for guidance on, you can make it a part of your, you know, everyday life. So getting to know your guides is about connecting, you know, via meditation, via dreams with that other place in order to get guidance for your waking state, so that you can live the best life possible.
Yeah, very much. Okay, so part five is feel better, and there are about 20 or so tips on how to feel better. One of them, number 87, was that says, every day connect to something greater than yourself. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think a lot of people just spend a whole lot of time, you know, about themselves, you know, doing the routine, the daily thing, that, you know, the idea of something greater than themselves is, might be a little foreign in a way.
Mm-hmm. Eckhart Tolle talks about the little me, right? He you know, in explaining, you know, how we can just sometimes be so focused on our own stuff and the ego. And I love that interpretation because that's really how it is. We can get so focused on our little life and our little selves and become so hyper-focused on it that we forget sometimes the greater picture of what's going on, that it's so much bigger than us. So goals are great. I'm all about it. You know, having goals and working your plan and working hard and making all your dreams come true. And at the same time, it's important to stop, I believe, every day and connect to something other than that little me, you know, to stop and say, just look up at nature, go take a walk, you know, with your dog in the woods or your partner or yourself, and just kind of stop and look around and realize that, you know, everything is happening exactly the way it's supposed to, you know, that doesn't require our help or our participation. And it's all really okay. So I think it takes the pressure off sometimes. And again, going back at it, you know, when you get back and working your plan is all things that, you know, ought to be done. But stopping sometimes just to get out of yourself and just pay attention to, you know, the bigger presence that's there is really, it's very humbling.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And it also, I think, you know, during those times when I sit back and do that, it's just, it makes those daily things seem so insignificant. You know, it's like, okay, you know, in this greater scheme, you know, life is good, you know, and then I can, and then my body kind of reacts and becomes more relaxed when I recognize that that's the, you know, that's in the scheme of things.
Yeah, agreed.
So now also one of the tips in Feel Better is called compliment someone. And I laughed when I read that one because I know someone who does that all the time, you know, with strangers all the time. And I have to laugh because, I mean, I'm not the kind of person that would go up to a stranger and just, start talking about saying or say something. And it's just, you know, but I see the benefit of it, you know, through this other person I know, because they'll just walk up and say something, some kind of compliment, and then it'll be a big smile or a laugh or a chuckle, or, you know, there'll be some kind of, you know, positive response. And I've seen him walk away and other people still laughing. So it's kind of like you can tell the impact that something like that does. So what would you say to, this, and this is coming from someone who doesn't do it but sees the benefit. So what can you say to me to help push me over the edge to become a little bit more expressive?
Well, I guess my first inclination is to ask you how you feel when someone compliments you.
Okay. Yeah, see, I tend to minimize, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's just, anyway.
Yeah.
That's my response. Just like you just heard my typical response.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it feels good when somebody notices that we do it, right? That we do a good job, it feels good, because that's just the human experience. We want to be validated in the work that we do, or the outfit that we picked out, or the cookies that we made. You know, whatever undertaking it is, it feels nice to be appreciated. So complimenting somebody doesn't have to be, you know, overly extroverted. You know, it can be for someone who's comfortable with that, but it can also be just thinking about how would someone feel if I chose to acknowledge their efforts for such and such, because when you bring it back to yourself, you know what it feels when somebody just takes a second to like one of your blog posts or writes a comment about your new book or something. You say, wow, you know, I appreciate that person taking the time to acknowledge my work. You know, it feels nice. So it makes you want to do that for somebody else.
Yep, I agree. And I just had one of those happen. And so anyway, that was just, your words are perfect confirmation of that for me. So, one of the last ones I want to talk about in the Feel Better section was focus on today. It's one of those things where we so often get caught up in the yesterday and tomorrow that, you know, today becomes yesterday before we know it.
Yeah. And today does shape our future. So how we live today shapes our tomorrow. So being focused on today is really all we have. I say this a lot in session with my clients and to my family. This is all we got, this 24 hours. So again, planning ahead and setting goals, it's a great practice. We need that. It's motivating and encouraging to move forward. But these 24 hours are all we have. So really, you know, so how do you want to design that? How are you going to make the most of this day? Who are you going to choose to interact with or not? You know, what are you going to eat? How are you going to exercise your body? What are you going to watch on TV or listen to on a podcast to make this day the best that it can be? When you stop and think about this 24 hours and how rich it is, and how you design today affects tomorrow and the next day and the next day, it really can become this sacred practice that you're pretty protective of, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, you know, there are all of those 100 tips that you have in the book, there's every one people can apply starting right now. And, you know, they can even, what I've done is, you know, gone through and just at random picked out a number and said, okay, what am I going to focus on? You know, because as I was getting ready for the show over the last weeks or so. You know, it's a great way to get the advice and kind of guidance, you know, that, that you're drawn to. So, one of the things also on your website, Jill, is that you, in addition to your services and books, you also have a blog. And I was going through and reading, and you had a blog on October Thoughts. And it was a real nice story of you asking someone what they might be, a man what he might be grateful for. So would you mind sharing with the listeners that story? Because I think it's real appropriate since we're only a couple days away from Thanksgiving here. I mean, excuse me, from Halloween. Jumping
Halloween.
Together.
Sure. This was a really one of my favorite stories and one that resonated so greatly with my audience that we've decided to run it. I think it's the fifth year running it for October. But it was about a former client of mine, a very special person in my life, who was struggling at the time. And, you know, in his true to form nature of just, you know, being very thoughtful with his words, he was struggling and I had asked him to focus on what he was grateful for. And he took a few minutes and he finally came up with the color of pumpkins, that he was grateful for the color of pumpkins. And it was one of the most beautiful sentences I've ever heard. I'm getting choked up as I think back to all those years ago when he said it. And it just resonated so deeply with me on just stopping and appreciating something as beautiful as that. And so I chose to write it up with his permission and share it with my audience. And it's something I get comments on every single year. So I am grateful that you just shared that with me, that it meant something to you too. So.
Yeah, it does. It does. And like I said, you know, when you're in the store and all of a sudden you see, you know, a huge box full of pumpkins, you know, you just can't help but have that immediate, you know, reaction to gratitude, and then gratitude times 100, you know. And it's just an effective way of eliciting that feeling. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's great. And now, and there's also one other thing before we go. There's one area on your website and work that you do that I think is really great, and that is the planting the seeds aspect of tools that you have on the website.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about planting the seeds? Because, again, I think it's a wonderful way to educate.
Thank you so much. Yeah, our line of planting the seeds are cards for kids and their caregivers to start the day, and I know adults use them too even when their kids are grown, to start the day with a positive thought. So we have one line of positive energy cards for the younger kids and their caregivers, and then we have an older line for 8 and up of statements of affirmation, so that you're starting the day with getting those neurotransmitters to fire in the direction we want them to go. And when you start at a young age with kids, getting them to think about how the day is going to go well, and most importantly, how they can bring something positive to the day to make it go well, law of attraction style, right? What they put out there is what they get back. These cards are reinforcers to that. So they're just, you know, colorful cards. The first set was designed by my daughter when she was a young girl, and and they're just meant to uplift and encourage and motivate you to think in ways that get you to live the life that you want to. And we're really proud of them. They're in classrooms and homes, and we love talking about them. So thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. Because again, you know, those are. I mean, the idea you're really empowering kids for, you know, first of all, by starting the day off right. I mean, it is so important in perspective and how you start the day. And I know in many of your tips in the book kind of talk about some morning kinds of activity to get yourself ready. But you know, also for the kids, you know, you're teaching that that pattern of, you know, a thoughtful start to the day, you know, and that's a kind of a habit that will last a lifetime.
Yeah, and even fun messages too, the kind of the way, Robert, you had said how you open my book to just random pages, and people have said that to me. They'll just pick a random page for fun, and that's their message for the day. The cards can be used the same way. So, you know, your child is stuck, or you're stuck in a thought, or you're stuck in a difficult situation. You just shuffle the deck, pick a card, and say, what's my message? What do I need to know? And whatever card you get, you know, I am a good friend. Okay, so what does that mean? You know, what does that mean? What might you have to do in this moment to be a better friend, or what can you do to change the situation you're in, for an example. So using them as a message is another way to utilize the cards.
That's great. That's wonderful. So anyway, a perfect way to, again, help our youth, and that's accolades to you for doing that. So anything up and coming, or is there anything, maybe any final words you might want to give to listeners before we close?
Sure. I have my next fiction book coming out next month. And that is a Devin series, a protagonist about a 17-year-old girl who solves crimes using her intuition. And that's going to be a series. So that is out next month in November. And for people looking to pick up that book or Trust Your Intuition or the Planting the Seeds cards, they can go to my website at www.jillsylvester.com. And that's S-Y-L-V-E-S-T-E-R.
Great. Well, thank you for your time today, Jill. I really enjoyed our chat, and there are a lot of things as a result of our conversation today and reading your book that have changed for me. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate you having me on.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Jill Sylvester. She's author of Trust Your Intuition, 100 Ways to Transform Anxiety and Depression for Stronger Mental Health. And again, as she mentioned, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.jillsylvester.com. And so, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again...
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at biteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Bite Radio Me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.